Well, I'm somewhat amused by the fact that having preached this morning on theologian Walter Brueggemann's thoughts about the church being people of exile rather than people of temple, our readings for this second service on the Feast of the Presentation of Jesus says a lot about temples. Well, kind of. The first reading from the Hebrew prophet Haggai was written when Israel was in exile and the first temple, Solomon's temple, had been destroyed. It contains words of comfort, letting the few people left in Jerusalem, known as the remnant, know that a greater temple would come and Israel would be restored to its former glory. And that did happen. Well, kind of. This is from a time when temple was particularly the place where the divine presence, the Shekinah glory, was located. Such an approach, such a mindset, as I said earlier today, would change and adapt as the exiles returned home, with their understanding of God being present to them very much in foreign lands and through this new network of synagogues that was building up. And that would change even more with the destruction of the second temple in 70 of the Common Era and the exponential growth of rabbinical Judaism that followed in the diaspora as Israel, the people of Israel was spread throughout the world. Jesus, the rabbi, hints at this change happening when he describes his own body as a temple, as he did in the second reading today. It's a train of thought that locates the divine spirit within us and celebrates the precious nature of bodies. And for me, it's the root and ground of Christian faith being an incarnational faith, a faith with feet on the ground, and a heart for human beings, particularly those in need. If we were using the good old Book of Common Prayer today instead of bulletins, we would have opened for the reading set for today and seen that the heading is the presentation of Christ in the temple, commonly called the purification of St. Mary the Virgin. Well, I have to say, ever since Bishop Anna said, why do we give Mary a title exclusively based on her sexual status? I've never been able to quite get round to calling Mary the Blessed Virgin anymore. There's something here, though, about purification that I think is worth addressing. It may have once been commonly called the purification, but it hasn't been commonly called that for quite a while now, I don't think. Mary and Joseph go to the temple in Jerusalem to offer their sacrifice for ritual purification. It's not that they were considered dirty, but that they were ritually unclean, particularly Mary. We in the West have perverted this idea of purification by essentially considering bodies and bodily things dirty, especially feminine bodies. Tied in with patriarchy and misogyny, it's been the great cause of harm in the church, beyond the church, and in the cultures the church has influenced. In Jewish thought, those things that were ritually unclean were those things in liminal space, the in-between times, the things of life and death. So a woman who had given birth was ritually unclean because she had stood at the threshold of life and death and new life, just as she was unclean when menstruating, as blood was part of life force. Those who touched dead bodies were ritually unclean because they had encountered death. And there were rituals each had to perform in order to be reinstated into the worshipping community as ritually pure. But this ritual uncleanliness was not moral failing. It was not to do with being in any way inadequate. It was a recognition that these things of death and life were in some ways too sacred for a community to bear. And so those who experienced them had some time away from the common life and then had rituals to perform in order that they could re-enter the community. But as Christianity developed, it became obsessed with a certain kind of morality, one which essentially saw bodies as somehow imperfect, grubby, and needing to be ignored as much as possible. And that's the legacy which we have today. But it's a legacy we need to move away from. For in our sacred texts, and indeed in the experience of being human, embodiment is something to be celebrated. Bodies are a gift, and obviously a rather essential part of getting around, an essential part of who we are. And when we teach people to despise their bodies, to look upon such things as sexuality and gender identity as dirty, somehow imperfect, we create a culture of harm and risk deep psychological and, in many instances, physical violence on those who do not conform to a perceived norm. So let's resolve to celebrate bodies of all shapes, sizes, sexualities, and genders in order that we might learn again that we are each bearers of God's life and spirit, for we are temples of the Spirit. Thanks be to God.